Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7. Tennessee gets the 11-5 win last night against Wake Forest. They punched their ticket to the Super Regional, I believe for the fifth consecutive time, the seventh overall in team history. So quite the run that Tony Vitello and company are on right now.
That's a stunning stat. I mean, they've been to the College World Series before. Like it went 0-1, right? 0-5? Right in that.
Yeah.
They had a good run, you know, back during that time period. They've had some good teams. It's crazy to me that, you know, they'd been to two supers before this. You know? That's a wild stat. Tony Vitello
kind of puts it into perspective a little bit of what he's doing.
No question. So, meanwhile, Wes apparently was up late writing last night. So, he's like, Wes, what do you think, buddy?
We'll see if he gets on the line here at some point.
Should I read his tweet?
Yes, please
do. All right, I'll read his tweet. Let's see. This is Wes's tweet from how long ago is this?
It's like 2:18 in the morning.
Okay, yeah. This is Wes's tweet from 3 a.m. The game started at 5, Wes. The game ended at like 8. Okay, fine. It ended at
like 8:30.
9 Eastern.
9:30 his time,
He says, this is Wes's tweet. Walk to the car, short drive home. On radio with that Joe Rex Road Nashville, a little more than 5 hours. I'm hopefully not taking the kid to school in the morning, so I guarantee you I'll be awake for about 2 minutes before that radio hit. All caps. Wake and rake! You're not waking and raking, Wes.
We'll see if we can get a hold of Wes at some point here in this segment.
At least wake and bake if you don't make the segment.
What did you make of Tennessee and their response, their win last night against Wake Forest to punch their ticket to the Super Regional?
Yeah, down 2-0. Wake beat them the night before. Wake's got big-time bats. They actually have they're in pretty good shape with their pitching staff. They've got some good arms. Now, Wake has not been a great pitching team. That's part of why they're playing in Knoxville this year. But I thought they might have been in trouble. But it's just a pretty relentless lineup. You know, this is not as good a team as last year. Doesn't it seem like more than a year ago? Like Christian Moore just hitting bombs. Yeah. After, you know what I mean?
It really does.
Like it was just a year ago. They lost a lot of talent off that team. But they have a lot of talent on this team. And they have a lot of veterans. You know, Hunter Ensley, pretty cool. He got a hit in his last at-bat at Lindsey Nelson. But they just they've got a lot of answers at the plate. And then you bring in Liam Doyle.
Yep.
And he's just fired up to get in there and dominate, and he did. So, great win for them. And, you know, ever since that 10-0 loss to Vandy in the SEC tournament, maybe that woke them up. Or maybe it's just as simple as, like, they just have a good formula for performing the postseason.
Well, they seem to, under Vitello for the most part, kind of rise to the occasion in the postseason. And that doesn't mean that they're winning, you know, every national championship all the time. But they play pretty good baseball in the postseason. And another example last night, I mean, look, they got down 2-0 last night. And I thought, oh, okay. Well, this could be a situation where we're talking about Vanderbilt and Tennessee not even getting to the Super Regional. And then they just went nuts in the fourth inning. I mean, there was just an absolute bomb by Andrew Fisher in the fourth inning. They scored 7 in the fourth. And by the time they walked out of the fourth inning, it was 8-2. And you felt like they were in good shape. Now, Wake, you know, battled back a little bit. I think at one point it was 8-5. And then Tennessee extends it again in the seventh and eighth innings there. But it just felt like a team that the swinging the bat really well, even dating back, like other than the Vandy game in the SEC tournament, they were swinging the bat pretty well in that tournament, and they're swinging it well right now. So can you keep that up going on to Arkansas? Doyle comes in last night, as you said, he ends up throwing 31 pitches. So you know, he pitched Friday, I think his number Friday was 104, and now he's thrown 31. So that's a lot of pitches over the weekend for Doyle. How good, how fresh, how effective will he be when he pitches against Arkansas? Because still, like if they're gonna make some noise and number one get past Arkansas and number two get to Omaha and be in threat, he's got to be a huge part of that. I mean, he's their best player, he's their best pitcher by far.
No question. So if it is a Friday, I haven't seen yet. I guess the NCAA will put out its schedule on Wednesday. We can find out when these games are. But
a couple hours before.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys better hurry. Better get to Fayetteville. But if it's a Friday start instead of a Saturday start, I do wonder if maybe Doyle is lined up to start in game two instead of one of this series. That would seem to make sense to me. I'd probably give him a little – because remember, these guys are used to
– 4 week off.
Yeah, we all think about the MLB rotation of 4 days off, but these guys get a week. They go a week between starts usually.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that continues to go. Frankly, I was a little surprised that they brought him back in there for the ninth.
Me too. Night.
Like, I get why. I mean, you want to make sure that you close it out. But I mean, it was
other arms.
It was 11-5 heading into the inning. I was a little surprised they brought him back out there. Now, he didn't throw a ton of pitches, but when they brought him back out there for the ninth, I was like, okay. I'd probably save his arm a little bit as they move forward here. But a win for Tennessee. They're still perfect at home in the regionals under Vitello. And now it sets up for, as you've pointed out over the last couple of weeks, arguably maybe the two most talented rosters in all of college baseball right now. Now, Arkansas is the 3 seed, and as Gentry Estes pointed out on our show yesterday, they got through their regional pretty easily over the weekend, so they're playing good baseball right now. That's a program that has had some pretty spectacular postseason failures over the last few years. So maybe this is the year where they put everything together and figure it out. And I asked you earlier, I'm very curious about this. What's the spiciness potential in the Super Regional? Anytime Tennessee and Tony Vitello are involved, there's a little bit of that that's potentially there anyway. But when you factor in Vitello's history with Arkansas and then just the stakes that are on the line right now, I think it's got a chance to be pretty fun. Whenever they announce this Super Regional coming up.
Yeah. Oh, it's like you bring them into any situation. It's like pouring Louisiana hot sauce onto the field. I mean, they bring somebody. It's interesting, though, because some of the criticisms of this team this year were they don't have that same
– fire.
Yeah, that same swag, that same fire. They don't talk that much trash. Watching recently, I'm seeing a lot of trash talk. Like, Fisher is a guy who, you know, he's tweeting, talking, getting called awful names, all kinds of stuff out there. They've got some guys who, I think Ensley has that intensity. Again, you're never going to be like Jordan Gilbert is just like, you know, it's just like, you're not going to totally replicate
Drew Gilbert,
that.
Jordan Beck.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Jordan Beck.
The combo of those two.
Drew Jordan Beckbert was one heck of an intense player, flipping everybody off. Yeah, you're not going to quite get to that. But, yeah, it seems like they've got that back now, which people hate. And is Arkansas Tyson or Purdue chicken? I always get it mixed up.
I think they're Tyson, right?
Okay.
I think.
Well, some Arkansas, like, booster tweeted last night about how classless Tennessee is and how the Vol Twitter is all over him.
Yeah, it's Tyson.
His last name is Purdue. So I'm like, wait a minute, is it Purdue chicken?
Do they have multiple down there?
Do they have multiple chicken dynasties that are competing for the
– chairman of the Tyson Foods.
Yeah. They got Walmart down there.
Purdue is chairman of Tyson Foods?
No, John H. Tyson is chairman of Tyson Foods, Arkansas.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, whoa, is this like a family, chicken families that are like combined? Are they cousins? Like what?
Are they collaborating for the egg prices?
Kissing cousins? Yeah.
Well, a lot of cousin talk on this, show, on this program.
Thank goodness. Nipples and cousins. They go hand in hand.
You're our expert for that.
Yeah.
Exactly. You like that?
I know both very well. So, but anyway, this guy was just going off about Tennessee's classlessness, and so Vol Twitter's all over him.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The spiciness between the fan bases, that's guaranteed. Is Vitello and Dave Van Horn, are they going to be, you know, are they going to be nice, or are they're okay now, or is that going to get just inevitably boil over?
Well, look, the fact is it's this time of year when there's just frankly more interest, more microphones around Tony Vitello, which can either be a really good thing if you love Tony Vitello, or if you're a person that really hates Tony Vitello, this is what you despise, and this makes you hate Tennessee and Tony Vitello even more. Like we heard from basically both factions earlier today and throughout the show yesterday of We had a text yesterday where that we were apparently too hard on Corbin and that we love Vitello so much. And I was just like, okay, whatever. People have strong opinions on Tony Vitello. They either love the guy or they cannot stand him. And you've reached the point of the year where you're going to be hearing from Tony Vitello a lot over the next few days.
Yeah. And if you really, you know, if you really, I guess if you feel strongly about him either way, I think you're right. It's like you're one camp or the other. Just listen to like a whole presser. Like, it's just, again,
it's all over the map.
Like, you'll be like, wow, this guy is so weird. but I love him. Or you will hate him even more.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. I swear I've never done drugs, but I went to the Stone Temple Pilots concert. We got to find this quote. Can we find this quote, Ian?
I will do my best.
I think I actually had the audio from the field, right?
I think you did.
It was on.
If we've played it before, I should be able to find it quickly.
Yeah, like I think it was actually from my tape recorder, and it's like, wow. After he had just like run down the left field line and like thrown himself into the crowd.
Which band was it?
How about last night?
You said Stone Temple Pilots or Pearl Jam?
Yeah, no, he was talking about going to a Stone Temple Pilots show when he was a kid.
I just want to point out,
I don't know how that really factored into the whole discussion, but
it's the year 2025. And Rexro just said tape recorder. So,
yeah, that's a
good
point.
As if he still has a tape recorder.
Yeah, that's a good point. I miss the days of the little mini tape recorders. I had this one.
Make sure your tapes are rewound.
I had this little tape. Again, it was this big in my mini tape recorder. Well, it had an Izzo absolutely unhinged rant one time about some Detroit sports radio host. Man, if you could hear it, oh, I saved that forever. And I would just like play it for Kayla. Listen to this, man. This is crazy. Charles was there.
737-1025, our phone number. Your thoughts on Tennessee taking down Wake Forest in the regional. The Super Regionals coming up against Arkansas. More on that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get-it-all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Tennessee wins last night against Wake Forest, and they punched their ticket to the Super Regionals. Taking your thoughts on that. Let's head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Nate to the program. Nate, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
What's up, guys? You know, I expect better from Wes based on all his, you know, level-headed tweets and everything.
What do you mean?
Showing up to the show this morning.
Oh, well, sometimes you got to get that beauty sleep. It's okay.
Yeah, we're going to have to, if we take over Stilly's show at some point, like do an afternoon switcheroo,
yeah.
I'll get Wes. Wes, how about 4 p.m.? Can we do 4?
Hey, Wes, are you up?
Anyways, yeah, I am and I know y'all had seen what I was saying last night, and I'm still pretty peeved about it. We are giving officials outs way too easily. They can now answer questions via text. What are we doing? And they even answered the question. Like, what did people say? Are we ever going to find that out?
Well, no, first off, we're not going to find it out. I mean, so Peebles gets chucked from the game last night, and he is going to be suspended for game one against Arkansas for getting thrown out of the game last night. So, you know, Wes Rucker tried to find out exactly what happened, and basically the response that Wes got from the umpires at the game was unsportsmanlike conduct from him to the other team, was basically what they said.
I mean, it'd be awesome.
Oh, good. Great.
Yeah.
I just don't – like, the umpires are never – unless they have to, they're never going to go into detail about those things. No.
Answering questions over text is so soft.
Well, apparently that's the way they had to ask it. So I don't know.
Is that right? That's not normally the case. Normally, if you
like, there was a pool reporter there, and Wes wanted to ask one. So the way he made it seem on X last night was that was the way to get in contact with him. He went through Tennessee, and that's what happened. So
interesting.
I don't know.
Okay.
So soft. Talk to you later, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, I would love to know what people said there to get thrown out of the game. Like, my thought process on it is this. Like, yeah, you got to have control of yourself. I also think as an ump or as a hockey ref, whatever it is, like, I can tell you, like, my background's in hockey. So I know, having spoken with some players and some officials, that you get a little bit more leeway in playoff games than you do anything else because everybody recognizes that the emotions are unbelievably high. And I think it's a skill as an umpire or an official to have thick enough skin to, like, navigate through that. Now, sometimes you just got to toss a guy. So I have no idea what people's said or what he did, and sometimes it doesn't really matter what the situation is. You got to learn how to control yourself a little bit better. So I have no idea. Maybe it's just as simple as that. I think where that's a huge problem is Major League Baseball, where some of these umpires have such huge egos and they can't get out of the way and they want to make themselves part of the story, where I think there's a huge problem with that in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I agree for sure. And I just hope with Peebles, like, it better have been pretty extreme. Yeah, because it just seems to me like, yeah, Wake Forest coaching is crap aside, yeah. Like there's yeah, you read lips during these games.
Yeah.
You know, you go back and forth between the dugouts and it seems like there's plenty of
there's
words.
Some stuff that gets said.
There's plenty of words flying around.
Well, and by the way, like, not to that level as the Wake Forest coach last night, but like Vitello, I mean, you could see, you mentioned it earlier, like the cameras are on him a lot. Sometimes he's saying some stuff from the dugout, and I'm just like, oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
He's about to get run. And then he doesn't, and it's like, okay, well, it just is what it is.
I mean, Frank Anderson, I can't believe that, like, there aren't, like, league-wide restraining orders on him, you know, based on some of the stuff that whenever the camera shows him. Robert says, might want to do a wellness check on Wes. Totally not like him to miss the show. Well, that's a take.
We do love Wes.
We love you, Wes.
Program, just full disclosure, we love Wes Rucker.
Yeah, I mean, look, hey, in basketball, shooting 50% is good.
Yeah,
you know,
I would say
in baseball, batting 300 is great.
I mean, look,
it's our fault for being on in the morning.
Yeah, Tannenbaum on last week, and it sounded like he was running through kind of like the Boston Marathon out there. So sometimes things happen here on live radio. That's what it's all about.
So we can get more into cousins and nipples as a result.
Exactly. So let's say Tennessee finds a way to beat Arkansas and punches their ticket to the College World Series in Omaha yet again. After what has been, I think, certainly a more difficult year than last year and in some of their other years to get to this point in terms of not playing great baseball, particularly not playing great baseball at home, down the second part of the regular season, if it all ends with them getting through this and getting back to Omaha, how do you put that into scope of what the accomplishment is, given all the changeover on this team, the way that things look like they were trending heading into the SEC tournament? If they get through this and find a way to beat a very, very talented Arkansas team, which is going to be no small task, if they do it, how do you put into scope what that accomplishment is for Tony Vitello and this program?
Well, first of all, and maybe it's already the case, but I don't think there'd be any question it's the best program in the SEC, and that's the best baseball league. Now, granted, the ACC does have more teams right now in supers than the SEC does. It's been a disappointing year. And the SEC is at best going to have – let me make sure I'm right about this. At best, they're going to have three teams in Omaha, right? Yeah, I mean, LSU and Auburn, and then one of these –
yep,
two teams. I know it's like, oh, wow, you only get three of the eight, but they've had better. So, but I think, like, it would be hard, as many great programs as there are, if they go into Arkansas and win that and get to Omaha at the expense of Arkansas, which has been a consistent power, but also kind of underachieving also at this time of year. What program would be better? Like, LSU is obviously, they just won it all. That's a terrific program. But I think Tennessee would stand above everybody else. Being a pretty amazing accomplishment. Because like you said, they were trending. You know, at one point they were 20-0. At one point they were number one this year. They're that good when they're at their best. But also they lost all those series, and that's why they're, you know, people were wondering if they were even going to host. It was close. They had to do some work in Hoover to make that happen. If they get this done, you just have to tip your cap and say, like, you know, Vitello is just – he has an absolute – it's already the case. They won it already. But to follow that up after losing all those guys, pretty incredible.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. The Stanley Cup Final is coming up between Edmonton and Florida. It gets underway tomorrow. We'll check in with our man Dan Rosen from NHL.com, get his thoughts on that matchup. Plus a Preds thought I want to get to with Dan as well. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. The Stanley Cup Final coming your way tomorrow for Game 1. Edmonton and Florida in the rematch. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Dan Rosen to the program from NHL.com. Dan, good morning. How are we doing?
What's up, man? What's up, Robbie? How are you?
Doing great, my friend. Did you get to Edmonton via plane, via sea? Are you going like on the back of a bird? How are we doing travel this time?
You cannot get here via sea, I'll tell you that much. I know it's via plane, two planes, LaGuardia out of New York, LaGuardia through Toronto, Toronto to Edmonton, and it was smooth yesterday, so I have no complaints.
Nice. Good. Very nice. Very well, nice. I have to say, like, purely from a hockey fan standpoint, I'm excited about this matchup. I think Florida, we probably underappreciate how great Florida has been over the last couple of years. They're just crazy good. This may be the best version of what they've got. And yet, Dan, I look at Edmonton and McDavid and Draisaitl and just the entire team constructed around them right now, and I feel like maybe this is it. Maybe this is their time. So what do you make of the rematch here in the Cup Final, and what do you make of Edmonton's chances this year to get it done and punch through for the first time in the McDavid era?
Well, you know, it's funny, right, because I like Edmonton's chances. I'll just start with there. I like Edmonton's chances a lot. I like them a lot better than I did last year. It does go with the narrative of you get here once, you figure it out, you lose. You don't have to lose to get when you get here, but to figure it out. But teams do that. It happens. And I think Edmonton really figured it out starting in Game 4 last year. And then, you know, look, they win Game 4, they win Game 5, they win Game 6, they force Game 7. They're a shot away from winning the Stanley Cup and making history that way. So they figured out this round. They figured out how to get back. They've grinded through. I think they've had a very professional attitude the whole way through, just like the Panthers have since last year, since the beginning of last year, really. So, like, I look at this matchup, and I think it's going to be a better series. Do I think it goes seven games? I actually don't. I think Edmonton wins in six. But I think it could be a better series, a higher level, higher caliber of play series than even we saw last year, because these two teams are slightly better, I think, and they're more prepared than they were a year ago. And also the narrative just fits, right? I mean, Gretzky in 83 loses to the Islanders. Gretzky, let's go with Gretzky and Messier in 83. They lose to the Islanders. They get back in 84. They beat the Islanders. Crosby and Malkin, they lose to the Red Wings in 08. They get back, play the Red Wings in 09. They beat the Red Wings in 09. And now you got McDavid and Draisaitl. They play the Panthers last year. They lose. They get back this year. The narrative just fits.
Now I'm having bitter memories of that Game 7 in 09, but yes, that definitely came to mind for me, Dan. So in terms of Zach Hyman, how big of a loss is that, but Matthias Ekholm coming back for Edmonton, what's the trade-off there?
Well, I think it's a significant trade-off, to be honest with you. It's a big loss. Let's put it that way, right? I mean, Zach Hyman touches a lot of parts of the Oilers' games. He is the type of guy that in this series can take the Panthers game and throw it right back in their face, because he's a pressure player. He's an in-your-face player. He's going to drive you through the boards if he can. He'll hit you in the open ice if he can. And yet he's going to go to the front end, and he's going to score the dirty goals. He's going to do all the little things, get his nose dirty. That's kind of the Panthers game. So he could throw that right back in your face. So I think that's a big loss. But the trade-off is, if the trade-off is, and you don't want the trade-off if you're the Oilers, but if you're going to take it, but getting Matthias Ekholm back in the series is a huge factor, because he is also the guy that can eliminate some of that pressure that the Panthers put on. And he's got a game now. I figure he's got more time. He should be able to jump in and play his 20, 22, 23, whatever minutes, and go back and get the puck, make a quick play to get it up the ice, release that pressure a little bit. He can hit. He can take a hit. He has a big wingspan and a big body that he can fend off players. He can fend off. He can protect the puck and to move it out of the defensive zone. And he can play a shutdown role. Like, you get him, if he gets in the defensive zone, he is so big and physical and strong that he is going to protect the front of the net. So I really do think that is a massive gain with Ekholm being back, but it is a pretty significant loss without Hyman.
So, Dan, I mentioned it. I don't know that we always give Florida the proper amount of credit for doing what they've done. I mean, this is three trips in a row to a Stanley Cup final. It's unbelievably difficult to do. I know Tampa Bay did it as well. But how do you kind of put into scope what they've done to this point, the accomplishment of getting back here, and the job that Paul Maurice has done kind of putting all this together since becoming head coach 3 years ago?
Well, isn't it kind of funny, right, Robbie, that like Sergei Bobrovsky was not the starting goalie in the playoffs 2 years ago?
Yeah,
it was Alex Lyon for games one, two, and three. And that was against the best. That was against Boston, the team everybody thought was the best ever, right? And that was Alex Lyon. And now the consistency of Sergei Bobrovsky has been sort of the backdrop to this whole Panthers run, if you ask me. But the consistency also across – you need the consistent goaltending or else you're not going to do it. But the consistency across the board in the message, in the style of play, in how this group is together, the camaraderie and chemistry that they have together, it has actually really been remarkable. And Paul Maurice has done a terrific job. Matthew Tkachuk coming in changed the franchise. Let's be honest. I mean, They haven't known anything but the Stanley Cup final since Matthew Tkachuk came in. Really just a franchise-changing move. But then they've had to replace guys along the way, and they've done it by filling those roles with players that fit their style. I mean, Seth Jones and Brad Marchand this year, AJ Greer as a fourth line player this year, you know, like they fit the style of play. They fit who the Panthers are, and they fit in seamlessly because of that. And that's Paul Maurice and that's Bill Zito understanding, you know, setting the tone, the type of team that they want, finding a coach that can coach that style, and then getting the players in that can play that style. And the players that they already had, the Barkov, the Bennett, you know, elevating them to play that style, and then really empowering Lindell, Listerainen, Gadjevich. I mean, these guys that Forsling, you know, like to be important and impactful players, and they've just taken their games to the next level. It really is a remarkable turnaround for a franchise. It can't be undersold.
Dan, can you put in perspective what Connor McDavid is doing now and what it would mean for him to win this? And also just McDavid and Draisaitl together as a tandem when you think about great tandems in this league's history.
Well, I mean, they're a great tandem. We talked about it before, right? You know, Gretzky and Messier, you know, Crosby and Malkin, you know, McDavid, Draisaitl. I mean, there's certainly others, but like, you know, the narratives of that and how they've come along and what this could mean and following in this, you know, history repeating itself is quite amazing, to be honest with you. I don't think you can put into perspective what McDavid does because I don't think we've ever seen it before. You know, like he's unbelievable. I don't know how else to describe it. Except just watch him because it's nothing can be happening in the game. He gets on the ice and then all of a sudden it's like you're watching an artist at work. Like he's just incredible the way he handles the puck, skates with the puck, his crossovers, the way he can check the puck back. He's so good. He is so underrated defensively for how good he is at getting the puck back. It's a part of his game that will never, I think, in his entire career, be talked about enough. But he has grown so much in his defensive game. There were times, I remember 2 years ago, I was having conversations with people about, like, he doesn't play on that end of the ice. Like, he just kind of hangs and waits. And when he, you know, and he's up at the blue line, and bang, he's gone because his speed is so good. You know, he's really good defensively now, and so much so that they're putting him on the penalty kill now. And it's hard to describe because he's just a highlight every single time he's on the ice. But it's now in the course of as we've seen him grow to being the player he is, now it's all at the big times, right? It's the important times. I don't think it's a fluke that the guy who scored the overtime goal in the Four Nations faceoff is Connor McDavid. Like, I don't think it's a fluke that the guy who scored the highlight reel goal to essentially eliminate the Dallas Stars is Connor McDavid. I mean, like, the guy's just there at every big moment.
Dan, last thing for you here. I do want to get your perspective on the Predators. It's a very interesting offseason. They've got a, you know, top five draft pick coming up. There's some speculation here about what's going to happen with Jonathan Marchessault. Is he going to be traded? Do the Predators move on from him after 1 year? They bring Andrew Brunette back as coach. obviously it was a horrible season for them this past year. What do you make of where they are and the path to get out of here with what is, a at the moment, especially at forward, a pretty old roster, particularly in their top six?
It is an old roster, but it doesn't mean it can't be a winning roster, because you got like Forsberg, Stamkos, Marchessault, right? I mean, these guys can play. They're still good players. You need to build under them. You need to build depth. I think that was the one thing we looked at last offseason. We're like, oh, my God, they signed Stamkos. They signed Marchessault, right? But it didn't empower their depth. And I'm telling you, look at the teams that we're seeing right now, right? If that's the standard right now. The Panthers have 19 different goal scorers in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yep.
The Oilers also have 19 different goal scorers in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You want to win in this league? It can't be top heavy. The Oilers figured that out, right? I mean, think about it. How often did we see, oh my goodness, it's McDavid and Draisaitl and everybody else, right? Oh, Zach Hyman's going to pop in there. Okay, fine. Nugent Hopkins may pop in, but it's still McDavid and Draisaitl and everybody else. And if they don't do it, we don't do it. Well, now that's not the case, and that's, to me, that's the standard now, and the Nashville Predators have to get there. They have to be able to empower their depth. They have to build that depth out a little bit, and that to me is the biggest part of their offseason right now, to build depth beyond what they have. You want to trade Marchessault? I don't know. You know, we'll see where that goes and all that, but they've got to build out a team, not just a top-heavy group of forwards.
Well, Dan, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this Cup Final. Really excited about it. Have fun as you travel along North America, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yes, sir. Dan Rosen from NHL.com, our guest on Robbie and Rexro. The Stanley Cup Final starting tomorrow between Edmonton and Florida. We'll react to what Dan had to say there, plus a point of clarification to get to on the Jonathan Marchessault stuff that we'll get to coming up next as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Joe, very quickly, a point of clarification on the Jonathan Marchessault stuff. So we've talked a lot about Marchessault and about whether or not he could be traded this offseason. I still think that is a very interesting conversation to monitor as we move forward here. One thing we've talked about is his contract, and we've thrown it out there that he's got a 15-team no-trade clause, which is actually not true until the final year of his deal. So Elliot Friedman has some confusion on this, and Puckpedia, which is basically the new cap-friendly, had some confusion on this. And Puckpedia's, they came out yesterday and basically said they've had it wrong the whole year. So he has got, according to them now, he's got a full no move right now. And I think the 15-team no trade list comes in the final year of his deal. But for the first 4 years, apparently, he's got a full no move, according to both Friedman and now Puckpedia yesterday.
Man, the Preds are just no move heavy, aren't they? Remember when they never had no NTCs? Yeah.
So, I mean, that doesn't mean that he can't be traded.
Right.
But it does mean that he's got full control.
Control over it. Yeah. So
that probably affects what you can get at the end of it, even though I don't think they're getting a whole lot anyway. I'm interested to see how this situation works out here for the remainder of this year or this offseason.
Get those calls going to Montreal, Barry. It'll work out that way.
We'll see.
He'll be happy with it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Friedman put out there it's a complete no move until July of 2028. There you go.
July of 2028.
That's a long time from now.
Would Marchessault be open to waiving that, I guess, is the question.
I think he would. Yeah, I think it just depends on where we're talking about here. So that's just another kind of layer to it to monitor this offseason. But wanted to go ahead and put that out there because there's been a lot of confusion on that front. So there you go.
That's a good clarification.
Full no move until July of 2028. So we'll see what happens on the Marchessault front. I mean, I had not really thought about it in the terms that Dan Rosen just laid out. It is kind of freaky that you have Gretzky, Messier losing to the Islanders and then winning in a rematch the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Crosby, Malkin losing to the Red Wings and then winning in a rematch the next year. And now McDavid and Draisaitl with an opportunity to do the same. That's kind of poetic.
That is. Yeah. There's another story I probably told, but I was in Pittsburgh that night because Katie was there on a work trip. And we went out with some – we actually went to a Tigers-Pirates game, then we went to watch this game, and I was like, well, fine or whatever. It was all these Penguins fans, and then the Red Wings got a goal to get within one and third. I was like, let's fucking go, you know? And everybody's looking at me like, who is this jackass Red Wings fan in here? Then I had to watch them all, you know, flood the streets, and they never should have won that series.
Is that a very painful sports memory for you?
I mean, the Red Wings haven't had a peep of relevance since, so, you know.
No, not really.
So it's been a while, man. 16 years. How about that?
Yeah.
But, no, it's a very
– not really looking any closer right now than they've been for a while.
No. It's been a – but, you know, sometimes you got to pay for being a dynasty, for formerly being the Yankees for the stupid salary cap.
Scale of 1 to 10, your excitement level for this Stanley Cup final.
It's 7.5.
I'd go 8.
Go 8.
Yeah, I'm about there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard for me to get to 10 unless it's like, you know, basically like your team that you either follow or covers involved, right? Like,
yeah.
That's where 10 comes in.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Or unless it's like, I'm trying to think of like if it was Edmonton, Toronto, I'd be about a 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because like, or something like that, some storyline like that.
Right.
But it should be great. And I did notice, like, Pierre LeBrun did a thing last year. He asked a bunch of execs and coaches, and, like, basically everybody picked Florida. And now this year it's pretty much split down the middle on this. And, I mean, there's still a great case to be made for Florida. Their goaltending's better.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're a better overall team. But this is just more 97. I think 97 tilts the scales for a lot of people.
I think he does.
It's going to be really exciting to see if he can actually get this done.
I'm really going to be interested to see if they lose, particularly if they just get destroyed in this cup final here, and it's clear that Florida's just way better. You know, everybody in the NHL is going to be asking the same thing. It's like, all right, well, McDavid is eligible for a contract extension on July the 1st. Is he going to sign it? Because I've already said it. If I was him, I'd probably just wait, see what my options are. And that's if they don't win. I guess if you win, he's just going to go ahead and sign it. Because, that's really what his career is about now. Like, he's already one of the greatest players of all time. In my opinion, he's the greatest player I've ever seen. Now, that doesn't mean that he's, you know, going to end up going down as the greatest hockey player of all time. As far as playing the sport of hockey, he is the greatest player I have ever seen. But you got to win. Like, you got to win some championships here if you're him. So, I'm interested to see, number one, can they win this one? And if not, how does he view their prospects of winning moving forward? What's that going to look like?
Will he be known as the greater one? Is that what it'll have to be, the greater one at some point?
See, this is where it's going to always get into, like, some nuance, because there are some records that Gretzky has that he's just not going to be able to touch.
Yeah.
Like, as great as McDavid is, he's probably not going to sniff the points record, right?
Like, it's just absurd.
It's unbelievable. It's just, and it's a different league.
Yeah. If you were watching in the mid 80s when Gretzky was doing that stuff, again, there's nothing, but he is incredible, but also it was a different game.
It's 2,857 points.
Goalies wore like the Jason Voorhees Friday the 13th mask and sometimes stop pucks. I think it's an interesting question if they don't get it done. What is the McDavid? 8 over what? What's the number? For McDavid, the cap's going to be going up.
What's the max you can be? I think it's 20% of the cap. I think so. He can get, if he wants that, he can get it. Now the question is that, because last time I think he signed for 12.5.
Yep,
and he could have gotten more. Like there have been reporting around this that the Oilers were prepared to give him just like whatever he wanted, and he took a little less to see if they could build a team around it. My guess is he'll probably do the same again, regardless of where he is, and he'll take less to make some money around it. But, I mean, you're talking about the cap's going way up.
15?
He's going to make probably 15.
15?
Somewhere in that neighborhood. So I'm interested to see how it goes. I just know that if the offseason comes and goes and he has not signed a contract extension, that's going to be what a lot of teams are looking at heading into next year.
No doubt. Where is Dreisaitl, by the way, on his deal?
He just signed last year. Which probably makes it more likely that McDavid is just going to hang around there. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like sometimes Dreisaitl, you know, we've talked about this before, but it's like It's a great tandem. Dreisaitl, I think Dreisaitl would be talked about more in this league if he didn't play on McDavid's team.
I would
agree. He's incredible.
I mean, Dreisaitl, his is $14 million per year. So you're talking about McDavid's going to come in higher than that.
Yeah, it's got to be higher than
that. It's got to be higher than that. How much higher is going to be the question. But those two together, pretty unbelievable. But at some point, you got to win. So here's your opportunity if you're them.
And like Dan was saying, Hyman is a big loss. It's nice for them to get Ekholm back. So, I mean, look, I don't know how Preds fans feel. I would assume it's a lot more than not, but I think it'd be cool to see Ekholm.
I agree.
Hoist the cup and play and be part there of will be winning the cup.
A former Predator will win a Stanley Cup. It will either be Matthias Ekholm / Victor Arvidsson, who played for the Oilers, or Seth Jones, who plays for the Florida Panthers.
There you go.
Who was probably
Preds legend.
A little less regarded here than Matthias Ekholm and Victor Arvidsson. But
he was a third pairing guy, right, when they traded him for Johansson?
Yeah. Yep.
But obviously, guy everybody knew was on the way to be
a little bit of a log jam in front of him. Yep.
Think about that, what they had and the blue line back then.
Think about where they're at right now.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their Tuesday. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.